Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
And welcome in to everyone's favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast. I've got at least three Wolves thoughts for you here today. It's a Phil's Wolves Thoughts edition of Flagrant Howls. Maybe even a fourth if you guys are lucky. There might be a fourth thought in there too.
Wow. Okay.
But the Wolves lose yesterday. It's the third time all year they've lost back-to-back games. And so I'm just going to throw thought number one at you and get your thoughts, Sports Dad. You've seen a lot of Timberwolves basketball in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. My first thought is I feel like people need to calm down with their Wolves PTSD. This is, again, the third time that they've lost back-to-back games all year. They have bounced back. Like, they've continued to remain number one in the Western Conference. But people wring their hands. And I'm not saying there's not things to, like, poke and prod from these losses. Yeah. They totally are things.
Yep.
But there just seems to be a lot of, like, breathing into brown paper bags. Oh my God, what are this? Is this the end? Is it all going to come crumbling down now because they lost back-to-back games, including a game yesterday where they shot like 30%. So I don't know. I'm here to say, let's all just chill for a second. We're this deep in the season. It's in March and they just lost back-to-back games for only the third time. I think they'll find a way to get back on track.
So how about this? How about instead of hyperventilating about Wolves defeats, because this is a great time of year. We're down to 21 games left. Games have started to take on forms. Like, you can start to see the playoff push, right? And like, I firmly believe that in sports, you don't have to be fighting for a playoff spot to sort of take on a playoff form. Like, you start to see things, and this doesn't just go for the Wolves, this goes for opponents too. You start to see things that you didn't see, let's say, back in December. Mm-hmm. But instead of just saying, oh my God, it's this, oh my God, they lost. See, this is the Wolves. This is the same old Wolves. I think what we can do is have rational conversations about what we see as the problems, which will bite them in the ass in the playoffs, unless they're fixed. Cause like, those are things to be, and I guarantee you the Wolves are concerned about, right? Cause yeah, this is a good team. These are not the same old Wolves. Do they have their problems? Absolutely. Could those problems lead to a playoff ouster? Yes, but this isn't a team, in my opinion, that I watch and say, oh, see, tonight they suck. Tonight they're no good. This is a team where, and this is very hard because it's the Wolves, this is a team where they are a playoff team. They definitely have what it takes to make a playoff run, but now you're looking at what needs to be sort of fixed here. So, mm-hmm. Yes, hyperventilating? No. slightly concerned or seeing things that you could be concerned about come springtime? Absolutely. But that's not a bad place to be.
Right. I mean, I think, first of all, that game yesterday, you could say the game from a couple nights ago against the Kings. Okay, Anthony Edwards leaves halfway through. Now, De'Aaron Fox didn't play, so the Kings would say that on the other side.
Sure.
You know, the defense got weird and leaky, and they could have run a better play for Karl-Anthony Towns maybe to win that game. Definitely things to poke at. But Anthony Edwards was thinking about having a child the entire first half and then left at halftime. So just kind of a weird circumstance. Last night or yesterday afternoon, this is what's crazy to me. First of all, it felt like a playoff atmosphere. You kind of alluded to that. Mm-hmm. Just back and forth, haymakers the entire second half.
Two good teams.
Some of the league's brightest stars, Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Edwards. I mean, how many future Hall of Famers are just duking it out last night on the court? You know, at least a handful. But the Wolves have now played the Clippers three times. And this is one of the premier teams in the league. I mean, the Clippers are considered heavier favorites to win the championship than the Timberwolves in most sports books. I know they're fourth in the Western Conference, but I believe they have better odds in most sports books to win the championship. So they're right there in the thick of it as a title contender. And the Timberwolves have played them three times so far this year, and they've held the Clippers to an average of 98 points per game. They average 117 points per... So the Wolves are holding the Clippers 20 points under their season average defensively. So I don't know. If they knock down a couple extra shots, they probably just win that game yesterday. And everyone's feeling great about this team, right?
I've got a feeling your notes are going to include fourth quarter clutch time. So
yeah,
I think that's where, and that's not just a Clippers thing. That's a since Christmas thing that I think is worth discussing, because that will undo you in a playoff game. But yes, again, these are not the Wolves that we're used to. Just like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, no surprise, they suck. Yeah. Like, this team definitely should be held to a standard, but every single loss cannot be that the sky is falling. If you go into a tailspin, that can be a problem. But yeah, this is a very different conversation than Timberwolves fans have had in years and years, probably going back to the Western Conference final team with KG.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's three games is a small sample size, but if yesterday and the three games against the Clippers are a litmus test for, hey, how would a series between these two teams play out? Well, first of all, most teams the Wolves are going to play in a playoff series, it's going to be a grind. There's a bunch of really, even the teams at the bottom of the bracket, it's teams like the Warriors and the Lakers with some of the greatest players of all time. So you're going to get into series where it's close in the fourth, it's back and forth, and there's haymakers, and it goes six games or seven games.
Oh, yeah.
But if defense is the main pillar for the Timberwolves, and we're using that as a gauge for these three games against the Clippers, again, they've held the Clippers under 100 points average in the three matchups. Yesterday, Paul George and James Harden were 5-for-26. Harden was 0-for-10.
Yeah, Harden didn't make a shot.
Because every shot had a Rudy Gobert hand or a Jaden McDaniels hand or a Karl-Anthony Towns hand or somebody in their face. And so I guess that gets us to the second thought here, which is on the late game struggles. Dane Moore had this tweet yesterday. The Wolves have the worst clutch offensive rating in the NBA since Christmas. And my second thought here is, can we really blame being a young team? Stephen A. Smith made that reference over the weekend too. Like, oh, they're a young team. And Kyle Anderson said about the late game offense, quote, "We're just getting it all out of the way right now. Playoffs, we're going to be great." He kind of said, laughing it off.
Yep.
"We're still a young team. People forget we got a lot of young guys out there. Of course, we got to grow up and figure it out. I think we will. We'll just learn from our mistakes." But here's the hole in that logic. Rudy Gobert has 11 years of experience and a boatload of playoff games. Mm-hmm. Mike Conley has 17 years of experience. Mm-hmm. Kyle Anderson has 10 years of experience, boatload of playoff games. Mm-hmm. Karl-Anthony Towns, I think we lump him into the young category.
28.
He's been in the league for 9 years.
Been to three playoffs, right?
Yeah. Monte Morris, 7 years in the NBA. He's like 28 years old, been in a bunch of playoff games.
Ant is young.
Ant, Jaden, Naz Reid is 23, 24. Nikhil Alexander-Walker is young. So I'll give you those four guys. They have four young players. But, I mean, couldn't you go up and down almost any roster in the league? You could, like, the Warriors have young guys up and down, too. You can't just say because you have, like, three young guys on your team that, like, oh, we're young. So I would avoid using the we're just a young – like, the Wolves are not anywhere near one of the youngest teams in the NBA.
No, and the clutch offensive thing, to me, is troublesome because it's now not a small – sample size. Like, it dates back to December now. So from John Krasinski's piece in The Athletic today, okay? The Wolves were 8-1 with a plus 23.7 points per 100 possessions net rating in clutch situations from the start of the season until December the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Their 126.3 offensive rating was sixth in the NBA during that time. So very good. Since then, the Wolves are 7-11 in clutch games with an offensive rating of 94.6, which is last in the league, and a net rating of minus 23.8, which is 25th.
It's really bad. Yeah.
That's really bad, and it's not, you know, it's not just like since February 28th thing. So, like, that's where I do think that it's becoming crystal clear that some things need to be cleaned up, and this is sort of a blessing in disguise, because you're getting this before the playoffs. Like, it's not derailing you. You're still going to be a top, you know, top three seed. So it's not like, oh my God, they're falling apart and it's done. I think these are things that good teams look at and say, how do we fix this? Like, this is a troublesome, because it's funny, the Memphis and Sacramento games, the Wolves got off to terrible starts. I think against the Grizzlies, they were down 14-0. Against Sacramento, it was like 16-4 or something. And then yesterday they got off to an unbelievable start and were blowing the Clippers' drawers off.
Yeah.
But the commonality is they lost all three. Why do you lose? You lose largely because in those last two games, your late game play was not near what it has to be.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation. Yeah, and in fairness to the young thing, I think if I could rephrase Kyle Anderson's quote here, so I'll read it to you the way he said it, and then I'll rephrase it. So he says, we're still a young team. People forget we have a lot of young guys out there. Of course, we've got to grow up and figure it out. I think we will just learn from our mistakes. I think what is more correct is the guy that is the highest usage player at the end of the games is really young. And then people forget we have a really young guy that we're leaning on at the end of these games. That's probably it. I mean, Anthony Edwards has figured out how to be a top 10 scorer overall in the NBA, and he's figured out how to take that leap, and he is one of the future faces of the league. But he hasn't fully figured out exactly how to unlock himself and the team in some of these situations.
Right.
And, like, the Clippers are a very switchy defense. I'm going to get in the weeds here with you real quick.
Football.
And sometimes that throws the Timberwolves off too, where, okay, they're switching everything and now there's a smaller guy guarding Cat, which actually is a problem for him at times. Like, how do they beat some of these switchier defenses? But they've got enough talented, smart people on the court. And, like, ironically, the opposite of what Kyle Lanard's been saying, they've got enough experienced veterans on this team that they should be able to unlock this. Like, the fact that they've got Conley 17 years. Cat, dude, you've been in the league for 9 years. You're not a young guy anymore. All right, let's go to school. Let's go watch some film and figure this thing out. Kyle Anderson, 10 years. I mean, Monte Morris just got here, but they've got enough experience to unlock this and figure it out. And I think I'd be a little more nervous if Anthony Edwards was, like, super aloof and just went against the grain all the time. But Anthony Edwards seems determined at every corner of his career to unlock the sticking point. So I do think they're going to turn this around, but it's a bad look, man. Like, you just read the stats since Christmas. The fact that they've stayed this high up in the standings and have been that bad late in close games offensively is pretty remarkable.
But the sticking point comes late. And I think, too, the one name that we have not broached here that has to be brought up is Chris Finch as well. Like, there's definitely things he could do late in games with timeouts. I feel like he, and this is sort of a dicey thing because it's a difficult path to walk at times. I feel like he at times empowers his players too much. And like with Conley and Gobert, they're older, that's fine. But, you know, like with Ant, the confusion yesterday where he gets a two-point dunk at the end with 3 seconds left, which is useless, which Finch had told him, take the three if time, and the Ants are a lost track of things. That comes back to your point about when that happens, that's sort of not having the feel yet for the actual game itself, and that's where you need help.
That play, I put that on Ant, because Finch told those guys, hey, we have a timeout left, so we can, there's 13 seconds left, we're down by three, we definitely need a three, but if it's not there, if the lane is open, you could score a two, we could foul, call timeout, right, advance the ball.
But there were 3 seconds.
But Anthony Edwards waited too long, or they just, right, you know.
But that's your point about the feel for the game. Like, yeah, like that's...
with 5 seconds, I think, and by the way, like the credit to the Clippers too, because a lot of teams just inbound it and take the foul. The Clippers played hot potato brilliantly at the end of that game, which is to be expected. They got Kawhi, just boom, throw the ball up in the air, throw it up just in the air, get
it out of bounds. Yep, get out.
Yep,
of the
and the clock runs out. So I don't know. It is their biggest problem. Late game, close, clutch offense.
What I would really like to see too is this. Like, if there's one area where Ant can develop between now and the playoffs, it's this one too. It needs to be, especially in the playoffs. Look, dude, you're great and you should take huge shots. I get that. But it needs to be more than you and Kat at times, or just Gobert inside. Like, Jaden McDaniels can shoot. I think the Sacramento game was testament to this. If you get Jaden involved and confident, he is a plus player. But when he's sort of just standing out there on the perimeter like this, and look, he doesn't have the cachet to say, give me the damn basketball, right? Morris got hot in the game yesterday, but gets only X amount of shots. And I'm not saying that these guys should be shooting right and left here, but I think the feel of like what Ant could have of when to involve guys could be the difference between a playoff win and playoff loss.
Well, yeah, I mean, yesterday is a great example too of like the defense that they've played on the Clippers. I think it's small sample size. It's only three games, but I feel like this Wolves team matches up really well defensively with the Clippers. The Clippers have a bunch of dudes that they love to go one-on-one and get their, you know, contested shots off. Like, the Wolves have lengthy athletic dudes that can make those shots even harder.
Yep.
But on the other side, I think the Wolves just missed a lot of wide open looks. I mean, I think Kat missed his last 10 shots in that game.
He got off to a great start and then got cold.
Yep.
Then went cold.
The Wolves shot, and this happened, I was at the game last week. They were, it was the ugly win over, who was it?
Grizzlies?
Was it the Grizzlies? It was the back-to-back. They played a really ugly game and they won at home. But they shot like 38% in the game. Mm-hmm. And they grinded out the win. Last night was the same thing. It was like they shot 38%. They're going to knock down more shots, I feel like, going forward. Like, they've come out of the All-Star break sort of rusty the last week and a half. So I guess my rambling point here is they clamped the Clippers in three games in a way that I think is sustainable. But I don't think the Wolves are going to shoot 27% from three-point range. And all. I think they match up well with the Clippers, right, and they just lost a playoff-style game in tough fashion yesterday.
But I think in the playoffs, what you have to be prepared for is the good teams and the smart teams are going to do two things. One, they're going to clamp down on Ant. Is that going to completely take him out of the game? Probably not. The other thing, they're going to frustrate Carl. So what happens then? Like, those, I saw it, Phil, first quarter yesterday, Wolves are looking like world beaters, right? And every single time, basket or not, that Ant or Kat thought that they got touched, they were complaining. And I'm like, guys, this is not a playoff formula. It doesn't do you any good to waste your energy bitching. It doesn't. And they're doing it every single time. And then both of them went to officials during timeouts to get explanations for why they weren't getting calls and stuff. Focus on what you can control. And the other thing is, the less you bitch, the more calls I think you're going to get.
Yeah, there was a lot. I thought it wasn't quite as bad as it's been in some of the derailment games we've seen in the past, but there was definitely like an assistant coach at one point came over and it's like, Cat, you got to get in the huddle here, man. Like, what are we doing?
Right. I think in the playoffs, you need to be laser focused on what you can do. Cause it's so stressful. It's so tough. Focus on what you can control.
Hey, before we get to a couple other thoughts, including a really interesting 10-day contract addition over the weekend, a shout out to our friends at First Equity Mortgage. So a few years ago, I had a great experience refinancing my home with David over at First Equity Mortgage. 24 years in the market. They pride themselves on supporting the community, treating every customer as a friend. And if you're interested, First Equity works fast. They have a great reputation in the community and the industry. They offer programs for veterans and for new home buyers as well, if you qualify. Check them out. David's a 20-year season ticket holder of the Wolves and the Lynx. FEMORT.com. And you can support the show when you do this too. FEMORT.com or ScoreNorth.com. Keyword David at First Equity. Also, Nicolay Law. Welcome on board, Nicolay Law, here to the Score North family of podcasts.
Love having him. The real Nicolay.
The real Nicolay. That's right. You may have seen a billboard or two around town. It's very possible.
Great beard.
I'm jealous of the beard.
He's got, you know what he's got? He's sort of got a Dallas Keuchel beard.
He does. He does.
He's got the Dallas Keuchel look.
He does have kind of a Dallas Keuchel look. I agree with you. And Nicolay Law knows that when you or a loved one gets injured, ordinary life can come to a stop. Things can get complicated. During that time, insurance companies are likely to pressure you. They don't care if you get better or not. They just want to poke and prod you. But Nicolay Law cares. They have seen every play that the insurance companies have to offer, and they'll go the whole way to make sure you get the compensation you deserve after an accident. Start your path to winning at NicolayLaw.com or give them a call at 1-855-NICOLAY. Okay, Judd, here's thought number three for you. TJ Warren is a really interesting 10-day contract signing for the Timberwolves. So he may be vaguely familiar to casual basketball fans, but 2020, when the NBA paused for like 4 or 5 months during the pandemic, they came back and they played the end of the regular season in the bubble, and then they played the playoffs in the bubble. And TJ Warren, who's like a 15 points per game scorer in his career, he was playing for the Indiana Pacers at the time. He spent the first few years of his career with the Phoenix Suns. The first game out of the quarantine and into the bubble, and he drops 53 points, 20 for 29. He knocked down 9 3-pointers in a win over Philadelphia. And then he went 34 points, 32 points, 39 points in the next few games. He was like the story of the bubble at the beginning of the run. And then Indiana went on to, I think it swept by Miami in the playoffs that year. But he had a great run toward the end. Comes back the next, so it was like, wow, this former first-round pick, he's breaking out. He's 25, I think, at the time.
Right.
And then the fourth game into the season the next year, he suffers a stress fracture in his left foot, misses the entire rest of the season and the entire season after that with the foot injury. And he came back last year with the Suns and the Nets. He was just not quite the same player, but he's a 6'8" wing, 220 pounds, former first round pick. He's 30 years old. He's a 15 points per game scorer. He's had three different seasons where he shot over 40% from 3-point range. And he said in an interview recently, I'm getting this from Canis Hoopus, that he's now 100%. He's ready to rock and roll, but he didn't catch on with a team yet. So it's this sort of what if story. This guy was one of the premier players in the bubble 4 years ago, suffers the stress fracture, and he spent the last few years trying to get right. And the Wolves just signed him to a 10-day contract to see if there's any gas left in the tank. So super interesting. If he can get back to being even like 80% of the player that he was.
Right.
Whew. We'll see.
So can he go play for the team in Des Moines, the Iowa team? Or
it's a good question.
What's the ability to get him playing minutes?
I don't know how that works. If you get a ramp up stint or if it's a 10-day contract.
Where he just has to play here.
He's he's got to play here and
okay,
see what you can do. He's kind of an old school profile player in that a lot of his offensive damage comes from the mid range. He's like a 48% mid range shooter who can also knock down threes in different spots, but his 3-point shooting has been kind of spotty since the foot injury. But I mean, this dude was a real legit like starting wing player for Phoenix and for the Pacers for a few years. So we'll see.
Question for you. Does the data show that the mid-range jumper is back more than it was about 3 or 4 years ago?
It's a good question. I don't know.
I feel like I see more of them now than I definitely did in the Rockets, Mike D'Antoni glory days.
Yeah, I think, and I'd have to go look and see like the league-wide numbers compared to maybe 8 or 10 years ago, which I can pull that up quick, but it does feel like we went way too far in the direction of like the Rockets did it more than anyone. The Rockets basically said under Mike D'Antoni and the front office, no one shoots unless it's a layup or a 3-pointer.
Right.
And that opens yourself up to the variance that they saw in that playoff game where they missed 27 consecutive threes. It's like, can someone just like get to the free throw line?
That's what that game was like. I was like, why don't they just make a shot and then go back to the three and they wouldn't do it?
Yeah. But it is like there's certain guys, and Anthony Edwards is becoming one of them, where he's a really high percentage mid-range shooter.
Yeah,
Kevin Durant has always been this. Chris Paul's been this. Devin Booker and TJ Warren also, where if you've got an open look from 17 feet, it's absolutely an efficient shot because you make it at a certain rate. Now, if you only knock down like 35% on mid-range,
sure,
you probably shouldn't be shooting that shot. So it all kind of depends on the player. But yeah, I think we went so far in the direction of, oh, analytics, threes are worth more than twos. It's like, right, but if you're just like a mediocre 3-point shooter, you should probably find a different spot on the court. Yeah, strikeouts, we went way too far.
Strikeouts. Oh, if you miss a three, it doesn't matter. Well, actually, if you miss 27 consecutive threes, it does matter.
Yes. So, and then, okay, thought number four to wrap the podcast here. Everyone needs to calm down, according to John Krasinski, about the ownership situation. It's the end of March is the deadline, not the beginning of March. Mm-hmm. So he clarified that yesterday that, and I don't know if like Glenn Taylor's maybe been misrepresenting this in his conversations with people. Cause I'm pretty sure Glenn has been telling like Doogie and others that it was maybe the beginning of March was the deadline and then they had to push it.
I read this from Johnny yesterday. I'm wondering if there are different sides of the stories.
But a deadline should be in writing somewhere. I'm just saying, right?
It should be, but we haven't seen it. I'm just saying, I wonder if there is a side from the A-Rod Laurie group being like, oh, it's fine. And Glenn's like, it's sort of wonky. And so
it feels like maybe Glenn doesn't fully immerse himself in what's happening all the time. I mean, he didn't even really know who Tim Connelly was until.
No, that's true. That's true. Basketball wise, that's true. You know what? I'm going to put the jury out on this whole thing. I'm not sure what to make of this yet.
They can't possibly be having a hard time finding the funding for this, though.
Oh, right? I'm not saying it won't work. I'm just saying the jury's out to me on like how this is all going to go eventually. I just don't know yet.
I think they're going to finish the purchase. Like,
They're
getting this team at like a $500 million discount.
I agree with you. I think it's going to go through. What I'm saying is like long term of how it's going to look and how it's going to play out and who's going to do what. I'm curious about. Yes, I agree. The purchase gets done. They'll find investors. I'm always leery of ownership that comes in until you've seen a little bit more once they gain full control. But I'm hoping
you're skeptical of A-Rod and Lori.
Yeah. I'm skeptical of everyone who buys a team. I was skeptical of the Wilfs at first. Like, you just don't know.
Do you think they're going to try and move the Wolves? Is that what you're skeptical of?
I don't think so at this point. But I mean, here's the thing. The building will be a huge thing. Like they are going to, and I don't blame them on this. They are going to demand a new building. I'm sure that they will invest their own funds to a certain degree, but they're definitely going to ask for state help, city help, county help. Target Center is just not sustainable.
I mean, I don't do a lot of reporting on this show, but from what I have been told, they understand or have been coached up on how impossible it is to get funding for a new arena, most likely, because we've look at the battle that we went through for 10 years with the Twins. The Vikings went through this battle.
Everyone got one, yeah.
So they are well aware that they can't just come in and be like, oh, let's ask the state for money. Yep. And that's going to get rejected pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So they've been putting plans together. I don't know how far down the road they are on this, but they've got the ownership group that they're putting together to make the final purchase. But then they're also looking at putting together a group. And I don't know how many overlaps there's going to be, a separate group to build some sort of arena or other businesses. And I don't know what their exact real estate plan is, but that they are looking to fully privately finance that entire.
Oh, project. God bless them if they do that.
So, but that's easier. I mean, if they're price tag gets up to about $2 billion, then okay, well, I mean, maybe you want to ask
truly
the public.
In talks, like if there are talks, I don't know if they're in talks with the Wills. I mean, I will say this, that Egan land where TCO is out there, there's a whole lot of land out there.
Oh, you're saying like move it out
to the suburbs.
Yeah.
Well, I think
keeping it downtown would be, I would hate if that team moved out of downtown.
But I think a lot of people would, but I will always go back to this. The Twins and Wolves get no parking. If you own a building, state-of-the-art building in the suburbs with parking,
you get to make all the parking money.
You get all the parking money.
Yeah, no, it's possible. I mean, there's been other. I mean, didn't the Bulls moved out 30 years ago? They moved out further with the United Center, right? I mean,
no, that's just across the street.
Okay, so they stayed.
They stayed. But I'm
Milwaukee
just,
stayed. They stayed downtown.
Yep. And look, ideally they stay. My point is that we've become accustomed, as bad as the Wolves have been for a long, long time, we've also become accustomed to there's no threat to move, there's no threat of this or that. These guys are going to be, I think, in some ways, is great, far more aggressive.
It'll be interesting to see. But they have to complete the purchase. They got to complete the purchase first.
Yep.
And apparently they have until the end of March to do so.
All right. I agree with you, though. I think it gets done.
That's a wrap on Flagrant Howls here with sports dad, OG Wolves watcher, going back to the late 1980s.
Wait. Before we go, just to prove it, I was going to show you my NBA draft button. The inaugural NBA draft.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that.
Little Pooh Richardson right there, folks.
Wow. That is a pin from 1989.
Yeah, it has yellowed slightly. You can see it was supposed to be totally white, and it's sort of off color now because of that.
Yeah, it looks a little bit yellow. Gross.
Wolves in the Metrodome.
See, it's pins like that that make this a Timberwolves lifestyle podcast. Amen. See you guys.